morning. I'm going to continue to talk about retesting trends in other populations, a little bit different from those that were covered in some of the studies that Matt reviewed for you, which, if you don't already know, those studies tend to come from STD clinic populations undergoing those randomized clinical trials. And so I'm going to try to bring you data from a slightly different type of population, two different ones, in fact. So we're going to be talking about trends in retesting and repeat infection rates using administrative claims data, very, very different kind of data set, from California Family Planning and Managed Care Programs during a five-year interval. So I want to start by acknowledging our my co-authors and our partners from the California Department of Public Health, STD Control Branch, as well as our partners from the California Office of Family Planning, Quest Diagnostics, and the Kaiser Permanente Northern California Health Care Program. So we've heard a lot about some of the challenges about retesting and how we measure them. And one of the challenges, from my perspective as an epidemiologist and data guru person, is that, first of all, there are some issues around having available reliable, unique identifiers, and they may not be available, or they might result in actually unreliable matching across clinical and laboratory records that we use in order to assess the levels of retesting. So some of the examples of these kinds of identifiers that we might have available to us include names and medical record numbers or some sort of client identifiers. But these still may differ quite a lot across different providers, even within a particular program that's serving clients and patients. Secondly, cases may not be accessing care at the same provider or laboratory after diagnosis, so that retesting may not even be captured as a result for those cases, and therefore those estimates of retesting may actually be quite a bit underestimated. And thirdly, the time frame for capturing retesting really hasn't been standardized. I think Pat alluded to this when she reviewed the recommendations from the 2006 CDC treatment guidelines, where it's supposed to be 3 months, but there could be some wiggle room for 3 to 12 months for opportunistic retesting if they don't come back in 3 months. So there's some issues there. It's actually difficult to assess retesting when you have that kind of lack of standardization in the time frames. And it's difficult then to compare retesting rates as a result across programs or providers. So to address some of these challenges in actually measuring retesting, our study objectives were twofold. And first was to estimate retesting among chlamydia cases using a very different kind of data set, administrative data sets from family planning and also managed care settings. And two was to actually assess trends in retesting rates among female cases accessing care in these two types of settings. We've seen the same kinds of trends that Matt showed in the STD clinic population. So here are our methods. First is that our study design and our method of analysis is really cross-sectional. And as far as the data sets are concerned for family planning, we use the FamilyPact paid claims data for what is really the largest family planning program in California, serving over 1.5 million low-income women who are residents. From that same program, we also get Quest Diagnostics Laboratory data transmissions on chlamydia and gonorrhea test results for the subset of FamilyPact clients who are tested by this laboratory. It represents approximately 20% of the clients in this program. Turning to the managed care data sources, we use data from Kaiser Permanente Northern California Regional Laboratory on also gonorrhea and chlamydia testing for enrollees who are seen in all 53 medical centers and facilities for Kaiser in Northern California. So it's a very large catchment area, and it's roughly 3 million enrollees, both males and females. Speaking about medical home, this is probably our best approximation of a population that does have a medical home, because Kaiser is a staff model health maintenance organization, HMO, with highly centralized coordination of clinical and laboratory services, and therefore differs quite a lot from a lot of the other managed care types of settings, in that it's much more centralized. Provider networks and managed care tend to be much more decentralized. As far as inclusion criteria, we're looking only at female clients or enrollees who are at least 10 years of age in either of these settings, and they had to have a positive chlamydia or gonorrhea test result during this period of January 1, 2003 through June 30th of 2007. And the testing timeframe that we used was based on matching the first chlamydia test positive to a second test that was at least 30 days through 180 days from the date of the positive test result during that period of January 31, 2003 through December 31st, 2007. And there's an extra 6 months of follow-up there to allow for the cases detected in the first half of 2007 to actually come in and be captured for retesting. And the outcome variable is the proportion of female cases that were retested at least 30 days through 180 days from that positive test date. Here we show the overall chlamydia positivity among young females who were tested in family planning settings compared with those tested in Kaiser in 2007, just to give you a sense of the relative morbidity of chlamydia in these two populations. So note the similar levels of chlamydia positivity across settings for both the 15 through 19-year-olds in the orange bars and the 20 to 24-year-olds in the gold bars. The 15 to 19-year-olds were higher at 6% compared with just under 4% for the 20 to 24-year-olds in both settings, a relationship that we've seen many times before in our ICP data time and time again. Let's look at gonorrhea positivity. In contrast to the high chlamydia prevalence that among young women that we just saw, turns out gonorrhea prevalence is much lower, seen here when we compare gonorrhea positivity for adolescents and young adult women, seen in family planning and Kaiser. The positivity is 1% or lower, with relatively higher rates among adolescents in the dark blue bars as compared to young adult females in the light blue in both settings. It's not very much there. Now, let's get to the meat of this. This graph shows the levels of retesting in the red bars among family pack quest family planning cases by year for years 2003 to 2007. What you see are essentially consistently low levels of retesting over all years, starting with 24% in 2003, which rises to just over 30% in the next 2 years by 2007, albeit with even a drop in 2006. The red line, in contrast, shows the trend in repeat chlamydia infection among those who happen to be retested over the same period. The repeat infection rate across all years was consistently high, varying from a low of just over 10% in 2004, going up to about 14% in 2007. And all years, no, or at least two times, if not more so higher, compared to the baseline positivity that I just showed you in both those two settings. Well, here we present trends in retesting and receiving infections for the same period, but now this time we're going to be looking at those female chlamydia cases identified in Kaiser during the same period. So here's the managed care group of cases that do have that medical home. The retesting rates, again, are in the red bars, but they start higher this time. Well, 38%, a little bit higher, but rise to as high as 51% by 2006, but fell back to about 40% by 2007. But at least you see that there's a higher retesting rate, at least among these cases in Kaiser. Now, if we look at the repeat infection trend indicated by the red line again, the rates start with 10% and rise to 13%, slight decrease by 2007, but essentially very, very similar high rates of repeat infection that we saw that are similar to the high rate of repeat infection that we saw in family planning. So something to think about in terms of the differences between public sector and private sector populations who are seeking care. Are they really so different? Let's look at gonorrhea. As Matt mentioned, there's not a whole lot of gonorrhea data on retesting and repeat infection. And again, these are data that are coming from a very different population from even those data that he presented earlier. So let's look at what's going on for female gonorrhea retesting and repeat infection rates for this exact same period. And as you know, both in family planning and Kaiser were using the same nucleic acid amplification technology. So we, as much as we screen for chlamydia, we're also screening for gonorrhea. So we're getting the same amount of testing essentially for gonorrhea. And what you see here is that the gonorrhea retesting rates also mirror what's going on with chlamydia retesting. Also very low, as you see in the blue bars here throughout this period, and they range from 26% in 2003, and they rise slightly in 2004 and 5, but essentially it's still pretty low at 28% in 2007. So all that old data that you saw from the 70s is still current here with respect to gonorrhea retesting. The repeat gonorrhea rate, again, is shown in the red trend line. So that's what you see, is that it's lower than with chlamydia, but still higher than certainly those very low, less than 1% baseline estimates for gonorrhea prevalence that I showed earlier. So the repeat gonorrhea rate and this trend decreased slightly from about 6% in 2003, but it's still about 5% by 2007. So clearly less than chlamydia, but a lot higher than what we saw in terms of the baseline gonorrhea positivity. Let's turn to Kaiser. What's going on in Kaiser with respect to gonorrhea retesting and repeat infection rate? Well, as we saw with the earlier estimates for chlamydia retesting in Kaiser, rates of gonorrhea retesting were also high, not surprisingly, at 36% in 2003, went as high again as 51% in 2006, but still about 40% in 2007. Now, interestingly, when you look at the repeat gonorrhea trend line here, it roughly mirrors that sort of increasing trend in retesting. It actually rose from 7.5% in 2003 to as high as 11 to 13% from 2005 to 2007. And so that raises some questions about the whole idea of who we are now capturing with increasing retesting rates that we didn't find before. And we're seeing actually higher rates of repeat infection for gonorrhea, interestingly. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. So a summary of these findings based on our results includes the following. Retesting rates were low at less than 50%, with family planning retesting rates lower than what we saw in Kaiser, and there might be some reasons related to that issue of medical home that might explain some of that. There were high repeat infection rates found in this analysis, though they're a lot similar to earlier studies and confirmed the higher yield compared to primary screening. And essentially, there was really little change in these low retesting rates and high repeat infection rates for chlamydia over those 5 years of observational data, at least in family planning. So although you have higher retesting rates in Kaiser, there were some really interesting increases in repeat chlamydia and gonorrhea that we saw in Kaiser that are of note. You can speculate why that might be. Limitations, well, there's a lot still. And first of all, there were no retesting data coming from external providers. And by that I mean, if cases were retested outside of these programs, we wouldn't be able to capture that information, and thus we would be underestimating the retesting rates. And secondly, it's not clear that we have actually, again, those appropriate or some sort of consensus on the time frame specifications for capturing retesting. For instance, here we actually dated this 1 to 6 month retesting time frame from the time of the specimen collection date. But we could have used the treatment date to ensure that the infection was treated, and then we capture the retesting from that point in time. Also, we could have limited the time frame to just the recommended CDC 3-month retesting time frame, as some of those with electronic chart systems have been able to program. But probably most importantly for next steps in terms of interventions, despite all the bad news that we heard about how poorly they might have performed in the past, we have not really addressed the impact of return visit rate in any of these data. The denominator for estimating retesting includes all cases, regardless of whether they return to the clinic. So I think it's fair to ask, are low retesting rates due to low return visit rates and or low provider retesting rates once those people do actually get back into the clinic? And if you hadn't had the chance to do so, to have heard Holly Howard's work earlier this week on the reasons for return visits among chlamydia cases and some of the missed opportunities for screening at those return visits, I really highly recommend that you try to catch it on the recordings when they are available online. But they essentially were based on this family planning population, and there are clearly some missed opportunities for trying to get women retested at certain types of visits. So recommendations. I have both analytic and program quality improvement recommendations based on these findings for you to consider. And first of all, from an analytic standpoint, I think it's really important to still continue to identify and use administrative data sets from laboratories and programs serving women, because these are large and potentially more representative of what's happening in the population, perhaps more so for managed care than family planning, but they're both very, very important populations being served and should be considered. Two is, I think we should incorporate clinic visit information to estimate return visit rates and identify those missed opportunities that we may be actually able to intervene on, at least from a clinic standpoint. And three is that I think it's important to compare retesting estimates using different time frames based on test and or treatment dates to kind of standardize and establish more valid and replicable methods for use across programs to be able to assess retesting well. And then from a program quality improvement standpoint, I think we should be using these estimates for feedback with program partners to continually try to get their feedback on how to interpret and, these findings, and also collaboratively design better interventions, perhaps for improving retesting rates. So thanks again to all our program partners for sharing their data. And I'm happy to take your questions.
When you discuss time frames to get into the petition, you told us what you have done, but you didn't tell us what you did, what you did. What do you expect one to do?
Well, I think we had an inkling that most people wouldn't be coming back at the 3-month period, and we wanted to be generous in our ability to assess retesting. So while the recommendation is for it to come back at 3 months, I think we wanted to capture a much wider time frame, and that's how we decided on the 180 days, which is stretching out to 6 months. Because in reality, people don't come back when they're supposed to. They may come back, but they may come back earlier. In fact, at 1 month, because they might have essentially gone back to having a relationship with an untreated partner and be experiencing symptoms and need to come back and be retested. And then some women just can't get scheduled in time. The schedules in these family planning clinics is pretty packed as their budgets are reduced, and so they can't get them back in even for a quick express visit. So we were trying to be liberal in our recapture to see what the best case estimate would be. But you're right, we could be doing a much more limited time frame. So we wanted to, it was much more exploratory from that standpoint.
Because we can then ask them to see them within the next 12 months.
Exactly, exactly. And in fact, in Holly's data from 2 days ago, she actually shows you what the return rates are starting from 1 month all the way out to 12 months. And you can see that whenever people come back in, if you retest them, you're going to get infection well above the levels that you would get if you were screening them just on an annual routine basis. So those are kind of very complementary data, and be worth looking at those too.
And everybody heard the question, right, of how she decided that 180 days. Other questions?
Yes.
I want to share with you that, for 9 years, I was the nurse practitioner with Kaiser Permanente in Georgia. And when they decide what you're going to do, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
And if they tell you that you're going to screen for chlamydia for women aged 16 to 26, you're going to do it, because if you don't, you're going to get a printout telling you what the percent rate is, you know, and then you have to explain yourself as to why it doesn't meet at least the 90% time. And so what we would do when we had these patients who were positive is that when they came in for treatment, they were given their 3 month basic follow-up. And we didn't really have a tracking system like we did with Taxman and Brett, but they already had a plan in the system. And they were always reminded of that appointment, you know, 24 hours in advance. If there was a problem with the appointment, then we would call the patient and say, look, you can just come in and leave a urine specimen for us, and, you know, we'll look at that. So there were a lot of things that happened at Kaiser that we were able to do and we were mandated to do that, actually, I'm not mandated to do in public health at all.
Exactly. I think those provider incentives within managed care settings really follow that model for a lot of quality indicators that are set by HEDIS, for instance. And so primary screening for chlamydia among young women is actively systematized and very, very well in most Kaisers. Whether that happens in more extended provider network settings, which are less decentralized and providers are less held accountable unless they're paid to do so in some cases, I think it's really, really going to be difficult to, you know, to really get a much more consistent increase or improvement in those kinds of either primary or repeat testing rates. So thanks for that additional
perspective. Right, and I think your mention of, you know, getting some kind of feedback about what how you're doing as a provider on repeat testing is a mechanism in some settings that you can do just to sort of continually give providers feedback of, you know, this is our goal and you're not meeting it. Not that you can hold them accountable, but at least they know.
Exactly. And you thought of something else that the reference to talking to me. One thing that I found very interesting, because I would see patients kind of on, you know, 90-day cycle of coming in for testing. And a common aspect of that was they don't have confidence because they can come in for testing every 9 days. And so I said, well, you know, tell me why does that disconnect? I mean, if you were to be confident, then you would feel the need to come in every 9 days. But I think because they do have that medical home, they're less apt to do what they should be doing, which is using products, because they can just come in and get treated. And if they have them, they can get tested for 2 years. And that, to me, was a real, you know, that was an eye-opener. And I think some of the other patients that don't really have a medical home who are out there in the public health system maybe feel that they need to use those times a little bit more because they really don't have it to fall back.
It's a really interesting comment about, you know, the continual need to come back in for, you know, that reason of retesting. I think the best analogy to the kind of routine return that you see in family planning might be for those women who have to come back for Jeppo shots or birth control refills. They've got to come back because they need those methods, and so it's kind of an important opportunity for at least those women to, you know, if they were positive before, to come back and just schedule that in for retesting if they were positive before. But for people who don't have to come back in, it's a little bit trickier, people on IUDs, and so,
yeah.
Thank you.
Can I respond to that from the public health perspective. I hear that from my patients all the time because I always ask, you know, what are you planning to do to keep yourself safe in the future? And they'll say, oh, I'll come back to get retested. And I say, no, no, that's after the fact. So you would plan to prevent yourself from having to get retested, but I hear that a lot of public health also from my patients. So.
Maybe we need to go back to it being really a stigma to have an STD that you really want to protect yourself.
Holly.
It's so funny that.
I mean, I think that just points to the fact that, you know, some of these data, like when we got found showing us earlier, with I don't think we are necessarily conveying to our patients the danger of a reinfection, irrespective of whether the fact that they are able to get to be treated again. I mean, there's at least an additive effect of risk to ethical pregnancy and infertility and PIE. And so I think maybe our counseling messages and our educational materials can actually be much more explicit, talking about those risks specifically and what that means to having a baby later, et cetera.
Yes. One more comment or question?
Yeah, just to spur off what Pat and Holly are saying, I think that this is the distinction obviously that we need to draw between primary prevention and then secondary, prevention and obviously tertiary. And I do agree, I think that Pat, you're right, right? In some ways we've kind of gone over on the other side. So it's like, oh yeah, you're gonna get a big deal, it's a period, you're good, right? But what we fail to really think about in the primary prevention is that, with each infection, like what Holly's saying, is there are pretty serious health outcomes that I think that we are missing the opportunity to really educate, especially younger women on that. Because I think that the very young women, specifically women that are still in high school, they have definitely gotten the message that chlamydia and gonorrhea are you get a teeny cup, you get the thing, you get a pill, and you cruise along, you're good. And you get it over and over, but there's no real issue. And so I think that that is something for us to think about, the educational component that we're not we're kind of living out a bit of a misnomer. It's kind of back to the thing in the early 90s, where we started saying, oral sex is no risk for HIV.
And kind of, if it's quick, you can pitch. Yes.
Our IUC data shows that condoms are not all that particularly reliable, apparently, in helping to prevent infection. So I certainly educate our clients and emphasize safe sex, but I think that needs to be looked at with great salt when it comes to chlamydia. And also, we feel really good when our clients are coming back for retesting, and they often are changing partners and so on. So,
I don't think
on the flip side, I feel like we're happy when they're coming back.
Right. And I don't think anybody's saying that we shouldn't be happy that they come back to be retested, but I think it's that message of, oh, gee, I don't need to do anything but come back and get retested and get treated. Okay,
great. Thank you.